morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to Dark Reading Radio. Today's episode is all about the cyber skills shortage. Now, your host, Kelly Jackson Higgins, will be bringing you a great conversation about the millions of new security, IT security jobs that will be created and the lack of people to fill them. But before she does, I want to remind everyone that the audio portion is only a piece of Dark Reading Radio. The rest is the online chat that takes place parallel to the audio, and we would love to have your voice in that online chat. Now, to take part, remember, just type your comment or question into the blog box labeled your post, and then be sure to click on the big red post button below the box. Well, Kelly, I know that you've got a lot to cover today, so I'm going to turn it over to you to begin.
Thank you so much, Kurt. And yes, we do have a lot to cover. And if we don't do it all, this live portion, we'll do a lot of it on the chat. So first, I want to introduce our guest today. With me, I have Carson Sweet, who's co-founder and CTO of CloudPassage. Now, CloudPassage early this year published a really interesting report on the security gap in the top U.S. undergrad computer science programs that actually part of the thing we're going to be talking about today. But I want to just, first of all, welcome Carson.
Kelly, thanks for having me.
And we also have here today Rodney Peterson, who's head of NIST's new National Initiative for Cybersecurity Education, which we're also going to talk about. I think it's going to give us some hope for the future here. So welcome, Rodney.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, Kelly, and thank you to Dark Reading Radio for including us.
Absolutely. I know you guys have a lot of really great insights, so I'm looking forward to it. But what I first want to do is kind of set the table for the issues that we're going to be talking about. As a lot of people already know, maybe some people don't know, we're sort of this sort of tipping point right now in information security. We have 200,000 unfilled cybersecurity jobs in the U.S. and about 1 million worldwide. And that's not going to get any better because demand is supposed to increase by 53% by 2018. And the bottom line is there aren't enough people with the skills to fill those slots. At the same time, as everyone knows, the cyber attack climate has been heating up. We see Russia going after U.S. political interests with the alleged hacking of voter registration databases and the Democratic National Committee. And then the routine, as we're starting to feel like it is, cybercrime problems continuing to rise, mega data breaches, I'll just point at Yahoo, among others. So basically, we really need more cybersecurity pros now than we ever have. But the tricky part is there isn't necessarily a clear path to a career in security, and that's what we're going to talk a little bit about. So I'm going to start with Carson, this first question, and then I'll hand it over to you, Rodney. But what always surprises me is this sort of painfully obvious, you know, and overly documented skills gap problem. Why hasn't there been kind of a more urgent effort until recently, it seems like, to sort of fend off this problem that we probably should have seen coming?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that folks probably saw the challenge coming, and I think the problem has been urgent for quite some time, but maybe you could think of it as a lower grade of urgent. And I think that from our perspective, what's happened in the last 2 to 3 years is that the requirement has just exploded. You know, there's been a huge surge in the types of technologies and the number of different types of technologies that need to be protected in the wild. There's been an enormous surge in how much of those technologies are actually being deployed that need to be protected. This is all, you know, cloud, social media, mobility, all these things are fueling that fire, this huge explosion. And this has, you know, created a situation in which there's more attackable surface area, there's more to attack. We're seeing more of these attacks happen. More data is being lost, more data is online. And on the threat side of the equation that you mentioned, state-sponsored attacks, you know, that's relatively new, not last 5 or 6 years, at least at the scale we're seeing it. And we continue to see attacker technology continue to grow in leaps and bounds. So I think that in the last few years, the problem has just become so pronounced that now suddenly, you know, it's sort of surged forward. And what we were trying to do previously is just, it's been completely outstripped. And I think that that's really what we're seeing today, and the reason there's suddenly this new urgency around it. And it almost looks like a new problem, but it's just a highly magnified problem that already existed, in my opinion.
Yeah, the scale is definitely a definitely more at scale. I'm sorry, Rodney, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. In fact, that is the reason that our first goal in the NICE new strategic plan is really around accelerating learning and skills development to create a sense of urgency. I think the need for cybersecurity professionals has existed for a number of years, but a lot of the energy has gone into recovering from incidents and to investigations and dealing with security breaches and not the more proactive pieces. So we're really trying to create a new sense of urgency, both for the more proactive approach and also to, you know, really address what we think is an immediate need. Not that education isn't going to be important for a long-term solution, but we've got to fill jobs quickly.
So one of the things that always surprises me is the sort of gap between the education system or the academia world and cybersecurity that still seems like it's catching up as well. Carson, study that your company recently published that showed that none of the top 10 undergrad computer science programs were actually requiring their students to take a cybersecurity course for their degree was so interesting to me and surprising. But then in some ways, it wasn't surprising to me because every time I talk to computer science grads, they're not necessarily talking about security.
Right,
and I think the
right.
other data point that was interesting was that three in the top 10 didn't offer any cybersecurity courses at all. And it just seemed like that was a big missing link. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit, let you share your thoughts on the findings of that study and what you think all that means.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that is surprising is that there's not more what I would call primary curriculum around cybersecurity that's required. And in some cases, as you mentioned, there's none at all, which is really, really surprising to me. And I think the cause for that, we actually got some interesting inbound flames, maybe we'll call them, a little bit of flack about, you know, from universities that said, well, look, we're providing, you know, we're teaching software developers how to, you know, sanitize input and sort of do these basic, simple things, which is helpful, which is absolutely helpful. But I think there's this idea that security is a secondary responsibility for technologists and someone else is going to do it. There are some little skills you have to have, some things you sort of need to think about, sort of hygiene things. But beyond that, not really a responsibility. And the problem with that is it creates an environment in which the security responsibility is, you know, for lack of a better term, pushed off or relegated to someone else. And that creates a situation that we've seen for years and years where you're trying to do security after the fact, you're trying to bolt security on. And that never ends well. That never delivers a good, you know, a layered, integrated security, you know, control system. And so I think that's part of the challenge here is there's just a broad mindset that a developer security is not a developer's primary responsibility. And it should be and it needs to be. And the organizations that we work with, the large enterprises that we work with, that make security part of everybody's responsibility. We're starting to see this more now with cloud infrastructure around the SecDevOps trend, for example, where security is becoming embedded with the actual operations teams. That works much better because it allows security to scale. If everybody's taking a small chunk of the responsibility, these skills are being taught, you know, the programs like the NIST programs that are being developed are giving these technologists opportunities to tap into these skill sets that they can apply every day in every aspect of what they do. That's the only way, in my opinion, from an educational perspective, that we're going to be able to help get on top of the problem. Essentially, it's safety has to be everyone's job. It is sort of an analogy that you might use.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rodney. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to tell Carson, I can promise him I wasn't the source of one of those flames, although many people encouraged me to do so. The part of the report and the articles that followed that I most agree with is about universities are slow to change. In fact, I've only been with the government for about a year and a half, and I was warned coming into the government how slow it operates. But I have to admit, having worked in a university for almost two decades, that the government actually works quicker than universities in many respects,
right.
And curriculum and keeping up with content is the best example. The one area where I feel like the study, the report, the conclusions kind of miss the mark, though, which I think is where a lot of the controversy that you were just describing stemmed from, is the focus on a cybersecurity course versus cybersecurity content. In our experience, you know, I think the jury's still out on what we should be doing. I think certainly everyone advocates that cybersecurity should be part of computer science, engineering, other curriculums that are preparing people for cybersecurity degrees. And I would probably personally be inclined to say I fall into that camp where rather than a separate course, which quite frankly in a university setting might be treated as an elective or something that you try to squeeze into your schedule if your study permits, that I would like to see cybersecurity across the curriculum. And when I think about just kind of basic ways that happens, even with my own two children, we think that English and reading and writing are so important that I know my kids in elementary and middle school did reading and writing across the curriculum. So it wasn't just in the English class, but it was the math class, the science classes, where they had to demonstrate both knowledge and application of reading, writing, and other kind of soft skills, if you will. But if a course is necessary and that's the way we go, I know there are some examples where, for example, the Naval Academy has a required, in fact, two required cybersecurity courses for all of its midshipmen. I think that's an option to consider. So I think that's the concern that not only the leading schools have, but a lot of us have, that the focus on just cybersecurity as a course might actually be more harmful than helpful.
I think just brought up a really interesting, a really interesting point about integrating integrating security into the curriculum I think you were talking, Carson, in terms of computer science, but I think, Roddy, you were also pointing out maybe, are you saying maybe not just computer science, but maybe across the board a lot of other curricula as well? It seems like that it should be a cultural thing, right, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're a pretty big believer that interdisciplinary approaches to cybersecurity, particularly at universities, but you know, even in the middle school and high school levels, is really important. We have, through the Department of Homeland Security, a grant to an organization that does a lot of teacher professional development, and they use the example, you know, if you're working with an elementary school children on, you know, how to add numbers together, why don't we say, you know, 64 plus 64 and turn it into a lesson about, you know, gigabits or memory on the internet and other ways that we can begin to introduce these concepts. So we absolutely think whether you're a business major, a criminal justice major, or a computer science engineering major, that in the digital economy, that cybersecurity proficiency is important.
Yeah, that's a great point, which is, you know, part of the reason that we felt like the, at least the availability of electives, and I still maintain that it should be somewhat of a requirement at some level. I guess the challenge that we see as commercial practitioners is that, you know, we're the folks that are responsible for helping organizations protect, you know, their cloud environments and their infrastructure and their big data and analytics, all these new things where all our data is being multiplied, copied. And when we hire college grads, you know, they usually do have, you know, the smatterings of things here and there where they've had integrated content. The challenge that we run into is when that person is suddenly faced with a broader security challenge or something that they need to consider, whether something's being done, they don't have a context for the big picture of security. And that's really where, you know, we kind of focus on the idea that, you know, at least a survey course, so there is a big picture, just like there's a survey course on hardware, a survey course on networking, could be sensible. The point, Rodney, that you made that I thought was extremely interesting, however, is the speed with which universities can change and can make changes. Universities have to operate, you know, in units of quarters and semesters, so it is hard for them and difficult for them to essentially keep up with the new technologies that are out. By the time they've reworked, you know, a curriculum, the technologies underneath have kind of vanished. So there's also this idea with educators that I've spoken to that's sort of interesting around the idea that the secondary education or the education in the universities is focused around principles, less focused on specific technologies. The technologies are used for, you know, sort of as the current today's technology testbed to be able to implement certain security principles and so forth. But really the university education is focused around principles and concepts and things that, you know, really may not change too much over time. And then the ongoing education, which is absolutely crucial, which, again, the programs that you all are putting in place now, I think are great. There are other commercial entities that are doing similar things. The ongoing technology focus is more on how individual technologies or new technologies might implement these principles or might be used to implement these principles. So I think the two have to go hand in hand. You've got to have sort of a foundational education that gets people, you know, in broad understanding of security compliance. They're all speaking the same language. They all understand the big picture. But then you've got these specific technology education programs that help people keep up over time. That's an interesting thing that we've been talking to some educators about recently.
That is really interesting, too. I hadn't really thought about the way academia has a little bit longer lead time for things in terms of change. So that's a really good point. So the good news about the situation right now is that we've seen over the past few months a lot of multiple industry, government, academia efforts kicking off to help get the education gap filled, the skills gap filled. Before we jump into NICE, Rodney, I wanted to see what you guys thought about this program that I learned about at DEF CON. Or after DEF CON, the DoD is sort of building out this training program for what they're calling cyber warriors, or cyber Jedi is the cool term. So their idea is to train folks for free, whether out of high school or out of college or community college, sort of akin to an ROTC program approach where you owe the military a certain number of years as a cyber warrior after you've been trained. And they're obviously, they have their own interests in getting more folks on the ground there in that space. But I thought that was a really interesting, innovative program that made a lot of sense because it kind of fits the ROTC model. And I wanted to see if you guys, what you thought about that in terms of, I know it's more of a DoD program, but they were looking at it as something where you'd go from DoD maybe and then work in the private industry afterwards or whatever. You were open after X number of years. They haven't really firmed up all the parameters yet, but that's what they're thinking about. It's still in the pilot phase. Carson, had you heard much about that? Do you have any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I've heard about it, and I think it's a great program, honestly. I think it's, the proof is going to be in the pudding, of course, and how it's executed and how well it's funded and so on. But the ROTC model is a good one. I'm a big fan of looking at past history in different industries and seeing how that might apply. Years and years ago, I was a paramedic before I got into tech. And in the 80s, there was a big medical nursing shortage. So one of the things that we saw happen in the medical industry is, these universities would put people through RN programs, and then they would sign up to work for a particular hospital for 5 years, and they would work off the educational cost. And, we talked, Kelly, in some emails transactionally about folks that may not have, the ability to go to a university that carries a program like this or go to a university at all. And to me, that kind of a program, has a great twofold, benefit. One, it does create a situation in which we are generating more cybersecurity talent, and it also taps into some of those skills, and capabilities and natural talent that may otherwise not be tapped into, because it provides an economic capability for folks to go get that education that might otherwise not be able to. So I think that kind of a program is absolutely brilliant if executed correctly.
Rodney, had you heard of that one? I'm just curious what you thought about it from your perspective.
Yeah, I have. And in fact, I think the notion of training and kind of accelerated learning is where we need to really focus our attention. I think academia, even with the criticism we talked about earlier about more cybersecurity courses or content for computer science, will gradually, shift into a positive direction, and over the long term will meet the workforce needs, but it's not going to do that in the next decade. And so we need to look creatively at how we can more quickly and more creatively train, and not only train, whether it's new workers or maybe underemployed individuals or veterans and others, but how can we, I think as Carson was talking about, take the applied part of cybersecurity and make sure it's trained on the job and continuously. Because, if you get a cybersecurity education degree from an academic institution 4 or 5 years from now, it's already going to be obsolete. And so training is going to be a really, really important investment. So that's why, even though NICE in its name has cybersecurity education, our mission and our scope is really to think about education, training, and workforce development kind of comprehensively. And so whether it's ROTC programs, Cyber National Guards, boot camps or other ways to kind of immerse people into principles and hands-on learning, we think that's certainly where the effort should be over the next several months and years.
Well, this is a perfect segue for you so we can drill down on the NICE program. So just sort of stepping back a little bit, Rodney, can you tell us a bit about the program and what the goals are in terms of, filling the skills gap and reaching out to some of these communities, like you're saying, who may not have access to some of the training?
Right. So I know you described it as a new program when in fact it's relatively new, but it has its origins in 2008 from the Comprehensive National Cybersecurity Initiative, where awareness and education were identified as kind of critical aspects that the nation needed to pay attention to improve cybersecurity. And of course, here we are in National Cybersecurity Awareness Month in October, where a lot of awareness is occurring throughout the nation, and that continues to be important. But the education piece is, I said, is really what NICE is focused on, including training and workforce development. And I think what is new and what I think needs to continue to change is both the prioritization and the investment. So even though we've been around since 2008, we haven't actually had a budget until last year. And that budget allows us to do very creative and innovative things. I'll describe more in just a moment. What we're trying to do is not just be the one-stop shop solution for this, because we don't have all the answers. Quite frankly, the private sector, industry, academia, and state and local government have to come together with us to find solutions that are going to help them in their local communities and perhaps be pilots or models for the nation to follow. So we did develop a strategic plan in the past year. We gave it to Congress. We've been working with a NICE working group, which is a public-private partnership, to try to execute upon it. I've already touched upon the goal that's most relevant to this discussion, which is accelerate learning and skills development. In addition to everything else we've talked about, your discussion of training and kind of hands-on learning, also maybe we want to just quickly introduce the topic of apprenticeships, because apprenticeships is something we typically thought of for trade or technical occupations, but increasingly it's being used in professions like IT and then increasingly cybersecurity. Our second goal is to nurture a diverse learning community, and that's where our core work with cybersecurity education, not only at university level, but now increasingly community colleges and K-12 schools, elementary, middle, and high schools, is really important, that we create a cohesive system of cybersecurity education that's aligned and allowing students to get clear academic pathways for pursuing a career. The third goal, however, is to guide career development and workforce planning. And this is really critically important, both for employers, human resources professionals, and others who, you know, are saying, I hear something about this cybersecurity topic. Maybe we need to hire some people. What should their job titles be, their responsibilities? You know, how should we shape our information security workforce? So what NICE is perhaps best known for is the NICE Workforce Framework, which we intend to publish as an official NIST publication in just a few days, that lays out 7 broad categories of work. So that's where the interdisciplinary nature comes into play, identifies 30 or more specialty areas. And then the new focus is to really look at work roles, because I think in the next decade, in the next generation, cybersecurity is not just a profession in and of itself, but it's a work role. It's everyone's responsibility. And as companies move to outsource or move to the cloud, we need contract officers, procurement professionals, lawyers who know enough about cybersecurity to make sure they're making good agreements and contracts in support of their organization. We need auditors who can audit. We need, you know, software developers who can securely code, et cetera. So that workforce framework is not only a tool for employers, but it will help job seekers to begin to see some common taxonomy around what cybersecurity work looks like. And critically important, we have both education and training providers aligning their curriculum, their certifications to that framework. So, for example, the Centers of Academic Excellence that NSA and DHS run have something called knowledge units, and those knowledge units are aligned to the framework. And then many certification providers and training providers are aligned to that framework as well.
So this has given me a lot of hope. It's really interesting. I'm wondering if we could just step back for a second and look at this through the lens of the specific skill sets that are kind of most in need today, which skills are the most lacking, and maybe how some of these programs or other programs out there could sort of fill those gaps. And I want to kick this to Carson first and see if you have any thoughts on sort of what you're seeing as the kind of missing skills or ones that are most in demand right now, and how we can get those skills connected with people, in other words, jobs.
Yeah, there are a few categories, Kelly. I think that if you look at the short-term needs, there's a huge lack of skills around cloud security, a lot of, you know, skills gap around mobile security, application development, You know, these are kind of the shorter term things that training programs, ongoing training programs can help with. More broadly, however, there's, and again, this is where education programs that focus on a degree program for cybersecurity, a master's program, doctorate program, there is a big lack of security architects. So again, it's, you know, you can have, to use the building analogy, you can have, you know, plumbers and carpenters and you know, sheetrock hangers and all this stuff. But if someone doesn't architect, you're going to have the Winchester house, right? So there's a big need for that. And the third is, you know, there's a need for a big gap, in my opinion, which the NICE program addresses, which I think is a wonderful program. The need for management to be able to institutionalize, which sounds like a terrible word, but, you know, really ingrain security as a part of doing business. And until that happens, and today business leaders don't know how to do it. They need frameworks, they need education, they need to understand how this fits into my business. And so going from sort of down in the weeds all the way up, there's a range of needs there. But, you know, right now there is just across the board technical challenges. Frankly, I believe that a lot of the technical skills gaps can also be addressed with automation, with machine learning, things along those lines, you know, artificial intelligence. I'm not a little bit, you know, out there right now. There's a term that I like much more, augmented reality for cybersecurity folks. I think automation can help there, but it's the higher mm-hmm. level understanding, the higher level learning, the architecture skills, the, you know, management skills to integrate security into an enterprise. Those are the skills that I think over the long term are really going to make the biggest impact on the problem.
Rondi, did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, whenever anybody asks me about the demand or the supply and the type of skills needed, I'm very eager to get down to the source of the data. And I bring that up because I think we hear a variety of data points and, you know, job demand numbers, and some are what I'd call aspirational in terms of, you know, we need 1.5 million, that's great, but we have the ability to fund and hire, you know, a third of that. You know, that's where the reality kicks in. So one of our values as part of our strategic plan is to seek evidence and make sure our actions and decisions are informed with data, and that we pursue sources of information that can help inform our actions. And our goal, also one of the specific objectives, is to identify and analyze sources that support projecting present and future demand so that we can make good judgments. So when I mentioned earlier some of our investments, we have given a grant to CompTIA to work with Burning Glass to develop a cybersecurity jobs heat map. And if you're familiar with Burning Glass, you may know they already evaluate job announcements and do some data based on cybersecurity positions and other fields as well. What we're going to announce in 2 weeks at our NICE conference in Kansas City on November 1st is the availability of a tool that will not only allow you to visualize that data by nationally as well as by state and region, but is to start to drill down into the types of jobs and how they correspond to the NICE workforce framework. Also to drill it down a little bit to the kind of skills, knowledge, skills, and abilities that those type of jobs typically entail. And then over time to build up the supply side of that as well, initially looking at where some of the people with the types of certifications you might look for, where they live and reside. So we're very excited about this development, and I think it will help us better answer those skills gap questions in the future.
Well, that's really interesting, and that'll be something that will be publicly available for either
yes,
side,
yes,
of job hunters and job recruiters. Oh, cool. Okay.
That's right.
That's great. Right. Yeah. So we have a couple more minutes before we go to our online chat, and I don't mean to jump out of order with questions, but there's something I wanted to ask you guys, because someone asked me this question the other day. Just we were chatting about the issues in general, someone not from the industry, and one of the things they were talking about was how you can tie in some of these job opening training opportunities specifically to underprivileged kids, low-income adults. You know, DHS has been looking for people. I know DOD is looking for people. I know you're awarding these grants. Is there sort of a path maybe for more underprivileged kids or people who can't necessarily afford to go to college where they can start getting this type of information? It sounds like some of your grants might be handling or addressing that, but that's something that makes you think about, you know, opportunities that could be missed if you don't reach out to those folks.
Yeah, and again, one of our objectives specifically talks about increasing the number of women minorities, veterans, people with disabilities, as well as underrepresented populations. You know, I'm really pleased to say there are a number of activities across the country working on this very problem. I'll just give you a couple examples. The Department of Labor has invested in community colleges to create grants to really help people who are underemployed or displaced workers. And quite frankly, these could be individuals already with a college degree, maybe a master's degree, and maybe earning a pretty big salary, but they need to come back and develop new skills. And they could come and learn about cybersecurity maybe in the course of a year, get a certificate, and then find a pathway into a cybersecurity career. The other example is that the National Security Agency with the National Science Foundation have been funding Gen Cyber Camps, which are really targeted towards middle school students as well as teachers. And many of those grant recipients, because these camps are intended to be for free, are in rural areas or areas where there are underprivileged children who can take advantage of these camps, not only to have a fun summer experience, but hopefully gain some interest in going to college and obtaining a degree in cybersecurity. And just one third one I should mention quickly, working with high schools to create dual enrollment programs. So a student could potentially have the opportunity to graduate high school with both a high school diploma and associate's degree. This is happening increasingly across the country. And in many cases, the recipients of those degrees are students who may have never gone on to college to begin with. So by at the age of 18, equipping them with an associate's degree really gives them a head start.
Well, that's really, yeah, I've definitely heard of that. We have that in our area here. Carson, did you want to add anything to that? We're getting close to the end of the bottom of the hour here.
Yeah, I guess the only other thing I'd add is the there's another sort of untapped talent pool, you know, that is interesting that we've actually done a bit of work with Dakota State University around. And that's an existing technology workers, skilled technology workers that want to transfer over and become security folks. So, you know, that's an area that in my career, my 23 years anecdotally, you know, without statistics and so on, that's been a great way to develop very, very good cybersecurity talent, folks that want to move into the domain from, you know, application development or network engineering or whatever the domain is that they're in today. And so you're starting from a base that's, you know, they're a bit closer to the ring, if you will. And that kind of a thing, Dakota State, for example, is working with Cloud Passage and other industry folks to develop a cloud security certificate program that folks go back and add on. So it's another form of kind of continuing and expanded education that can help existing technologists that, you know, are closer to making that jump, accelerate, you know, their learning to be able to start to deliver their cybersecurity skills faster. So I think there are tons of untapped pools of talent, if you will, and it's wonderful to see, you know, all the different organizations are really kind of focused on trying to make these things happen. The thing I would hope for is that at some point these programs start to come together and coordinate and start to click together to make a really cohesive program. That I think is what's going to start to really not put a big dent in the problem over time.
Absolutely. I think it's really good to hear some of these initiatives I'd not heard of. This is really promising, I think. And I guess the key, of course, is connecting the people to the programs. But we can talk more about that probably on our online chat as well with some of the audience members. So first of all, before I head it back to Kurt, I just want to thank Carson and Rodney for your time here on the show. It was really, really interesting. I learned a lot. And everyone else, stay tuned for the online chat. We can throw more questions at them. And I'll hand it over to Kurt now.
Thank you so much, Kelly. And as Kelly said, we're now ready to go to the online chat portion of Dark Reading Radio. Kelly, Rodney, and Carson will be moving over there now, and we hope that you'll join them. As a reminder, to take part in that online chat, all you have to do is enter your question or comment into the box marked your post, and then be sure to click on the big red post button underneath the box. I want to remind everyone that if you're listening to this in a streaming or podcast format, that Dark Reading Radio does appear live every month. Please watch darkreading.com for information on the next episode of Dark Reading Radio. We would certainly love to have you here, love to have you as part of the online conversation. And now for Kelly Jackson Higgins and everyone here at Dark Reading Radio, thank you so much for being with us. We'll see you in that online chat.